This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Confirmation hearings for Judge Brett Kavanaugh are wrapping up in what many are describing as a political circus. Angry protesters were repeatedly dragged out. Democrats claim they need more time to sift through mountains of documents in Kavanaugh's record. Meanwhile, new and disturbing revelations about Donald Trump and his administration. Bob Woodward's book, Fear, Trump and the White House, paints a picture of what he describes as a nervous breakdown of the executive branch. On top of that, White House aides are lining up to deny authoring the scathing anonymous op-ed published in the New York Times. All that plus another primary upset. In Massachusetts, Boston City Councilor Ayanna Presley beats out 10-term incumbent Democrat Congressman Michael Capuano and the political junkie Ken Rudin, or is it Ken Rudin, is here to talk more about that. Hello, Ken. Or is it Rudan? Rudan.
Thank you, Fink.
Where to start? Oh, well, let's start hearings.
Where to start, exactly?
Yeah.
Where to start? What a week.
Yeah, but let's start with hearings. I don't know. We can talk about the substance if you want. You're the political junkie. You can tell me if you really want to talk about and analyze what the protests are. Democrats don't have enough time. Mountains of documents. Hey, we need more time. There is, you know, these interesting emails about Kavanaugh's take on Roe v. Wade. But on the hunch that he's going to get confirmed, should we move on and talk about whether this has political impact, or do you want to talk more about some of the
things? This is important stuff. I don't know if it's important for the Democrats on their base. You know, we always talk about what Trump is trying to do with his base regarding, you know, rigged elections and witch hunts and things like that. And so maybe this is about an appeal to the base. But the fact is, you mentioned two important things, although you left out one. You mentioned the fact that the White House has kept from the Democrats, thousands and thousands of pages of what Brett Kavanaugh did when he was in the George W. Bush administration. And as some emails are leaking regarding his views on abortion and affirmative action, it's giving the Democrats more ammunition. But also, I think the fact is that one name that we haven't heard much of is Merrick Garland. And the fact is that for all the Republicans talking about Democratic obstructionism and the fact that Democrats are trying to, you know, delay this legitimately elected president and his right to have a Supreme Court nomination, well, the Democrats are still seething over what happened in 2016 when President Obama tried to name Merrick Garland to replace the late Judge Scalia, and the Republicans not only wouldn't give him a vote, wouldn't give him a hearing. So that's part of the anguish and anger as well.
All right. And so the question is, does any of this have any impact in November? Is there any political hay to be made by either side by November?
Well, you know something, the Republicans think it's to their advantage. For example, obviously, the vote will come before the November 6th elections, and there are some Democrats in very ruby red states like Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota and Joe Donnelly in Indiana, maybe even Claire McCaskill in Missouri, that they're watching, the Republicans are watching their vote very carefully, and a vote against confirming Kavanaugh could result in a backlash to their reelection chances. But at the same time, the Democrats, you know something, I think my mind has changed a little bit as well, because once upon a time I said, look, everything I'm hearing from Susan Collins, the pro-choice Republican from Maine, everything I'm hearing from her and Lisa Murkowski seem to suggest that they don't have any objections to Kavanaugh. And basically, if they vote yes, if all 51 Republicans vote in favor of Kavanaugh, it doesn't really matter what the Democrats have to say. Now, with this more and more information coming out that maybe Kavanaugh has been less than candid about his views on affirmative action, maybe he's been less than candid about abortion being settled law, you know, the Roe decision being settled law, maybe there is some, look, obviously they're trying to get those two Republicans, or at least any two Republicans, to switch. Maybe Murkowski, maybe Collins, maybe Tim Scott, the African-American Republican from South Carolina, given what Kavanaugh has to say about race and affirmative action. So the Democrats have not given up hope that they could stop this. So it's more than just a show. It's more than saying, well, look at me. I'm Cory Booker. I'm I'm Kamala Harris, I'm running for president. It may be the fact that they really think they have a shot at it, although it's very limited. It's a very slight chance, but I think they have a chance.
Yeah, well, and again, in particular races, it might have one kind of an effect. And then more generally, if it affects voter turnout, and that is going to be the big wild card in the upcoming election, if it affects voter turnout and turns out more progressives, because this is one more reason why progressives need to show up, nationally, that could have a big impact.
That's absolutely true. But at the same time, Donald Trump is going from state to state. He was in, I guess it was Montana yesterday. That was a beaut. And he's going to North Dakota today and things like that. And, thank you very much. Thanks, Fink. And basically, he's trying to rile up his supporters, too, saying they're trying, look, if the Democrats take over, there'll be impeachment hearings. They're going to take away everything we've earned. And you've got to come out to vote. So there is a serious, almost frantic effort with about 60 days to go before the election to get both sides out. And obviously, you know, whoever side wins will win in November.
That would be the Donald Trump who doesn't come out looking very stable emotionally in Bob Woodward's forthcoming book, much of which what do you make of the impact of this?
Oh, my God. There is. I mean, look, you know something? I think if I gave you one or two or three or four bullet points from the book, you'll say, well, we kind of knew that. We knew that Trump is kind of nervous about Bob Mueller. We know that Trump, according to his aides, is showing lack of interest or lack of knowledge, a lack of grasp of policy. So we kind of knew that stuff. But when you put it all together, when you hear some of the quotes, the quotes with names being mentioned, like Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, saying that the president has the understanding of a fifth or sixth grader, which of course insults fifth or sixth graders. I mean, that's for sure. And then, you know, also John Kelly allegedly calling the president an idiot. And of course, yes, these officials deny it, but Bob Woodward has a track record on honesty, and I think more legitimate than the president of the United States. But even having said that, to see all that in a book and then a day or so later come out and see that op-ed, that anonymous op-ed in the New York Times that basically talks about the infighting and the chaos and the fact that so many of people in the administration are trying to stop the president.
Yeah, this is more than infighting. Let's talk about the op-ed, because it's more than infighting, and it's more than people trying to save. That's always happened, trying to save the executive from themselves. Maybe they, you know, sort of recognize that they're on a precipice politically. But these are people who are having to steal letters from his desk to preserve national integrity and national security.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. There's always been infighting. We saw it with Reagan. We saw it with Clinton. We see it with everybody. We saw it with Obama. But at the same time, I think all these officials, ultimately, their loyalty was to the president of the United States. These people, from what I've gathered from the op-ed, basically are plotting against the president, stealing documents so the president won't sign it against the country's better interest. They're just plotting. They're saying, don't worry, there are people who care. Now, I mean, this is a tough decision. It's one thing to say, well, you know, there's a sense of grown-ups in the White House. But there's also a sense that, look, Donald Trump was elected and you have a staff, you know, I mean, who deserves a staff who supports his agenda. I'm torn on this. I really am. I think that you know, if it were any other president, we'd say this is a palace coup going on. So I don't know what to make of it. But
it's a question of national security, you do have to wonder. This is not a simple power struggle. These are people who, and remember, they're vetted by the White House. These aren't people elected by Democrats to serve in the White House. These are people the president chose to be with him. And they were presumably loyal at one point and recognized the danger here. This is more than just, I don't agree with you. This is national security involved in this. So it does seem to be a categorically different question than we've ever seen revealed in the press before. And now, of course, people are having to run for cover and all kinds of recriminations and fear in the White House about who might get blamed for having said this.
But isn't it the funniest thing about this, in my view, is that he or she who wrote this op-ed obviously did it with guarantees from the New York Times that they would stay anonymous. So reporters are calling everybody up and said, did you do it? And they say, no, they didn't. And well, as a matter of fact, a few of them called up Mark Felt. And he said, no, I didn't do it either. I didn't do it. I mean, that's exactly what happened with Deep Throat. When they asked Mark Felt, the deputy director of the FBI, if he was deep throat. He said, of course not.
Yeah.
So of course everybody will say, of course not.
Hey, let's switch gears here. I want to talk briefly about Ayanna Pressley's primary win. Another big win, another big upset for what one might call the establishment in the Democratic Party.
Well, you know something, this one is a little different. I mean, it's fascinating and definitely worth talking about. Ayanna Pressley defeated Mike Capiano, the Democrat who's been in Congress 20 years. He's no establishment figure. He's no moderate centrist. He is, I mean, he's a progressive left-wing Democrat. But the difference is, according to Ayanna Pressley and many activists who work to defeat him, they say that, look, he's been in Congress 20 years and nothing is changing. He is a white Democrat in a minority-majority district, the only one in Massachusetts. Massachusetts has never sent a person of color to the House. She would be the first. Of course, Ed Brooke was in the Senate. But Pressley, I mean, basically, it's not so much ideology. I think it's generational. And when you think of Andrew Gillum, who won the nomination for governor of Florida, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's going to win that seat in the Bronx and Queens in New York. Whether it's about ideology or not, the fact is the young people, they're impatient young people, and there's a lot of it is about generation and demographics.
And they're showing up to vote, and that's going to be critical in November.
Yes, and it's one thing to come out to vote in the Bronx and Queens, and another thing in Somerville, Massachusetts. Will they come out in Ohio, Michigan, Iowa, the states that Trump won in 2016, states where they desperately need to unlodge Republican incumbents, which they can do if Democrats come out and vote?
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. As always, a pleasure. Thanks, Ken.
And thank you for getting my name right, Steve.
Ken Rudin is on the
right.
State of Things.
Exactly.
Just ahead, rich and personal history of the Lumbee tribe in North Carolina. We're going to talk about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.